retro reels.
Just so Jables.
Shall I leave these on for the episode and see what happens?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
You look professional.
Do I?
Yeah, you do.
Oh, dear.
We're not going to say exactly what Jables is leaving on for the rest of the episode.
I don't know if I sound quieter, though. Okay. Right then. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Just So Jables Film Podcast. This week, it's...
Retro Reels.
Yes, it is indeed. And we are going to mate. And for Retro Reels, if you're new to the Retro Reels concept, normally we watch a film that we've never seen before and give you our instant hot take reviews. This week, with Retro Reels, we'll be watching a classic film that we put on at the Corn Exchange. And that film is, our kid?
The Thing, brackets, 1982 version.
Indeed. So, I suppose we should pretty much get straight into it.
Yeah. What do we know?
What do we know, Ben?
We know this is set in an icy wasteland. Is it Antarctica?
Yes.
And it stars Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
And a few other people. It's a John Carpenter film. And it has an alien element to it. And it's a scary film.
Yeah. I think with a lot of retro reels, that's me covering my fumblings, we tend to get into things a lot more afterwards. So we probably will again, but... You know, there's plenty to talk about beforehand on this film as well. I'm a big fan of this film. It was me kind of pushing this for retro reels, wasn't it?
Yeah. We did have a couple of requests, though.
Yeah, that's true.
From the community.
Yeah, thanks for taking that away from me, Ben. But I really wanted to see this style of film. There's a certain style to John Carpenter films, isn't there? You know, think of the ones that we like. There's, you know, The Fog, Escape from New York.
Yeah. Halloween.
Halloween.
They Live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. It feels slightly like, it's obviously the wrong, not non-wanky. It feels like slightly dirty filmmaking almost, but it's also visually stunning as well, without being flashy. It feels very specific to his type of films. Even the newer ones, were like Ghosts of Mars, is it? That was one of his that, like, a lot later. It was only like probably like 10 years ago. But there's something in the style, and I think it's to use... charades as a thing. It's the whole thing. It's a combination of the visual style, the musical choices, the videography, like the how it is shot, the style it is shot. And it doesn't feel like it's set in one style. It's not like a fixed cam, wobbly cam. It just feels like a really good blend of all of those things. Because there are some great single shots of things. Think popping on my head, just the dog running towards the camp, that kind of style of stuff. But he portrays themes of the film very well. So, you know, a lot of this film is about isolation. It's about, like, people being stuck in Antarctica before anything even happens. You know, there's that, you get that feeling that people, they don't really want to be there. I can't remember. Are they oil workers or?
They're research teams.
Research team. I can't remember. But is one of...
But Kurt Russell's character, I can't remember his name in it, but he's the helicopter pilot, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's not actually part of the research
team.
So he's more of a kind of action guy from the start.
But they kind of want to be there, but don't want to be there as well. You get this thing, so...
I think the thing with John Carpenter that I find is that I really like the choice of actors in those films.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell, Jamie Lee Curtis, Adrian Barbeau, in all of his films.
Yeah.
They are movie stars, but they look like normal people. Yeah. And you don't get a sense of a shiny person acting.
Yeah.
You get a sense of a real... Or like in The Fog, for example, you do get a sense of a real community and real people.
It's a natural kind of performance.
Exactly.
Stuff,
and I really like that about his films.
Because Kurt Russell's in...
Escape from New York. And Big Trouble in Little China.
Of course. That's not a John Carpenter film, though, is it?
No, I don't think so.
I think so.
Oh, is it?
Is it? Ooh.
I'm 99% sure it is.
Okay, Google. Is Big Trouble in Little China a John Carpenter film? Can't hear me. I'm just saying.
I really thought it was.
Right. I'm gonna
check that.
Wow, our kid, you're spot on. I did not know that. Yeah, well played. There's almost like a cartoony comic book feel to them. Not like they're comics. Almost like a graphic novel feel kind of thing, actually, to a lot of the films.
Even Starman, which is also a John Carpenter film. Fact check that if
you like. I'm not going to.
But that's got the same sort of thing. It's not cartoonish, but it feels like it could be a comic or a graphic novel, doesn't it? I think.
Do you think they're sort of like, I'm sort of thinking about The Fog and stuff. They're not simple, they're not basic, but they're kind of stripped back. So they're back to the core of what needs to be there rather than extra fluff and polish and
maybe
that kind of stuff.
And they do have there's a sort of, not jump scare aspect to them, that would sound bad, but there's very much a, a conversational piece, and then you'll cut to like almost like a, I know I said there's not lots of still frame stuff, but you'll cut to a frame of someone, or you'll cut to something that is almost like a comic book panel. That's what it feels like to me as well. And I guess on the back of that, with this film, music's massively important. He does a lot of his own scores, doesn't he, in those films? But this is Ennio Morricone score?
Is it?
Yeah,
well,
it is.
Well, I didn't even know that.
I know, and I'll be honest, I didn't know that until I looked it up beforehand, because I just presumed it was a John Carpenter score.
Because I only really associate Ennio Morricone with the like spaghetti westerns and those kinds of things, which is probably a bit unfair. I've never associated him with this film at all.
Yeah, but it's got that kind of heartbeat to it. There's very much, it's like a dun, 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 that carries through all the way through the film, which John Carpenter scores themselves, they actually do a lot of the time, or just a lot of repetition, and it just turns into like an earworm. You think of like the Halloween tune, when that, you know, there's a lot of repetition.
And that can really increase the tension as well, can't it, when that increases.
And also, I could be wrong, but I think there's quite a lot of not silence, but parts without music in terms of when some of the horror scenes are happening. I'm thinking of like when you've got the chest defibrillator bit, and like when things happen. I've talked about jump scares enough, like when we talked about the podcast, but it doesn't like music like a to like make you jump. It's like the stuff, there's enough horrible stuff happening that it kind of like lets you kind of go whoa. So you kind of like back away from the screen rather than like jump away from the screen.
It is quite grisly, isn't it, in those effects? Because it's quite bleak as well with the setting. And then with all the paranoia and all the grisly effects, I'm surprised I like it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I do.
Yeah.
So when was the last time that we've all seen this film? Because I'm just trying to think. I probably haven't seen it for, let's say, like 20 years, maybe.
I'd say about 10 for me.
Yeah, because, same here.
Because there was a computer game that came out. It probably was about 9-10 years ago. And I remember thinking about it then. I think, ooh. And there was also, a follow-up sequel.
There was a 2011 film, wasn't there? That I think coincided with the video game.
It could have done, yeah. Actually, I think you're right. I think there's elements of crossover in there. But that basically prompted me to watch this film again.
Yeah. What I didn't realise is that it's got roots going back longer than that. It was actually based on a book from the 1930s.
Yeah.
Called Who Goes There by John W. Campbell.
Yeah.
And then there was a 1950s film version, The Thing from Outer Space.
I've seen that.
I've definitely seen that. Yeah. And I think that's, to be honest, when I think about The Thing, I think sometimes I mix the two up a bit, which sounds bad. But I remember seeing that original one when I was a kid, and there's like a frozen block of ice and stuff, and like wobbly hands and creepy arms and stuff. And I was like, oh, I was probably way too young to be watching it, to be honest. And actually, it's probably one of those films you'd watch it now and you'd be like, this is ridiculous and it's stupid, but I was quite scared of it as a kid.
Well, I know that I watched that. Do you remember, it was when I was younger, I was probably like between 10 and 15, I'd say. BBC used to show a lot of sci-fi films on BBC Two at 6 p.m, a lot of black and white films, and it was like this, and it would be like The Day the Earth Stood Still and The Thing from Outer Space and all of those kind of like black and whitey films. Because they, you know, they're not scary, bloody kind of horrors. They're
kind of cute now.
And I remember watching loads of them with Dad. So I know I watched it then. So it probably was the same sort of time, Ben.
Yeah.
So talking special effects, there's a lot of practical special effects in this film, isn't there? Which bits do you remember?
I just remember like contorted weird bodies and heads hanging off things and very organic, stringy things hanging all over the place. That's my main sort of memory of
stuff
it.
Stuff with the dog, I guess, is in
there. Yeah. I'm not going to spoil it, but let's not talk about that until afterwards more, because there's some specifically that I remember that are just like, that's awesome.
Yeah. to be honest, I don't really think about the effects as much as I think about the mistrust and the paranoia and them doubting each other. Yeah. And so those human things I think of really more than the effects.
It's a bit like what I like about it like that as well, not just the paranoia stuff, but even before that, it's like in Alien. Alien was one of those kind of like first films where people from working in outer space weren't hey, we're Flash Gordon, yeah, shiny suits, bits
Star
of
Trek
people.
Kind of stuff.
These are like the, they are like the space truckers.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not all bright and shiny. They're there to work. So they talk and banter like they're working in a factory.
Yeah.
Like of a, and it's like that in this. That's what I love, those kind of early conversations, and where it's just like, it's a group of blokes who are just chatting, stuck somewhere they don't all want to be, drinking beer and getting through. And yeah, I love that, you know, motif of it. And then when it gets bad, it's like, how are they? You don't know how they're all going to react. And they do all react differently. Yeah. So, yeah. Anything else to add before we get over there, Ben?
Ooh, anything else to add? I'm just looking forward to it. Again, as I said, I do think I have mixed up in my mind elements of the original, like, 50s film with this film. So I'm quite excited to watch it and go, ah, so this is the version that I remember from the thing, 82, versus what was the year of the other one? 50-something?
51.
So I feel like I ought to know this film a bit better. I feel slightly on the back foot because, you know, it is a good film. And you obviously know quite a lot about it, J-Balls.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm going to watch it. I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, I do actually remember this quite well. But I just haven't thought about it for a long time. I'm looking forward to the setting. I think, you know, something like Antarctica is a great setting for this kind of thing. Even if you didn't have a telepathic alien there, I think you could make a film with similar themes, couldn't you? Like, say, the isolation. Because I think it's that cabin fever thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the, well, it's not just isolation or loneliness or anything like that. It's like, how do a group of people respond in a contained / claustrophobic environment where lots of things are against them? So you've got, well, obviously, like, weather conditions, climatic conditions. You've also got equipment, potential equipment failure, all that kind of stuff. Things running out, things not working, people getting antsy, all that kind of stuff. Cabin fever type stuff, but with extreme environments as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love that kind of stuff.
Arkid?
Yeah, looking forward to it. As Ben said, it's been a long time since I saw it. So I think with all of the other films we've seen before in Retro Reels, I've seen them a lot more than this film.
Okay.
This is one I've seen slightly less and certainly less recently. So I am looking forward to sort of seeing it with fresher eyes, perhaps. I like John Carpenter, but I know that a lot of his films have become successful in retrospect, haven't they?
Yeah.
So like this, I think The Fog, they flopped at the time, but with the sort of cult following DVD, it's become much more well regarded. And I was looking into it a little bit today, and from what I can see, it flopped at the time partly because of sci-fi fatigue, because there are a lot of Star Trek films and E.T. And films like that around, which were more optimistic than this.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting thinking about how superhero fatigue hits now, sort of
well
about
into that,
how this was then, I guess. So yeah, looking forward to it. I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah, no, me too. I'm looking, you know, as Ben said, I do know a lot about the film, but I'd say it was something that I watched a lot. It's not the kind of film like a Star Wars, like a Star Trek that you'd geek in. It had a massive world and stuff. So I didn't really like dig deep into it. I kind of took it for what it was and really liked the film and saw it many times. But I just haven't watched it for a while, so I'm really looking forward to seeing it on a big screen and just, like, enjoying it properly. And we'll get into some of the other stuff later on. Don't think we've missed anything, because we haven't. Right, let's hit the Corn Exchange.
Let's go.
Bye.
See you there. We're back. We just watched The Thing. It was awesome. Arkid, what do you think?
Do you want a little synopsis?
Yeah, go on.
Do a little synopsis. So we're starting off with a view of space. We do see space at the beginning, don't we?
Do. We
do.
Predator-esque. Or probably more the other way around. But.
Absolutely. And then we are with a research team in Antarctica who, at the very beginning, are kind of attacked by another research team. They shoot each other. It's all a bit messy, isn't it?
Yeah.
But not really talked about very much. They
not
just
massively,
sort of move on to other stuff. But there's a dog wandering around. We're introduced to this group of 6 or 7 guys who are all based on this research station in Antarctica. They're slightly wacky kind of 80s characters. There's a guy on roller skates. There's a Vietnam vet. There's sort of what you expect. There's also Kurt Russell, the pilot.
MacReady,
the pilot, and his lustrous hair,
which
is almost a character of its own.
He looks quite epic, doesn't he?
He does look epic, but we'll come on to talk about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, all hell kind of breaks loose in the shape of the alien who is infiltrating the team, so it becomes this fight against an alien invader, but also a sort of fight against the paranoia that is also infecting the team. So it's a fight for survival on all counts, yeah. really. Will that do? I feel like I haven't quite brought the magic there.
No, but it's hard enough. To. We'll be talking about it enough. So it's
enough to get on with. So, Jables, kick us off with your thoughts.
Kick us off. I really liked watching it in the cinema. It was very good, despite the slight technical issues at the start. But we'll gloss over them. They were quickly resolved. Well done, our kid. A couple of things that stand out to me off the top of my head. I forgot how strange the dog is in it. It's a weird sort of concept because I always think like if it was done nowadays, it would be done over the top. It would be made to do something or kind of like perform or I don't know, but it's so well done. It's just dog running at the start, not that part. It's like later on when it's just walking around the research station, but it's so well controlled. I don't know how they done it, but it's like literally looking and kind of like slowly stepping and walking around. And it's not menacing, but you know there's something wrong, I'd say is what it is. You don't, because you're just thinking it's a dog. It's a husky or, you know, whatever it is. But just the way it walks and the way it moves, I just really like that. That's one thing that just stuck out to me.
Yeah, just how it kind of peers into rooms.
Yeah.
There'd be really tense music now, wouldn't there, if they made it?
Exactly.
But really, it's just a dog kind of wandering around, kind of like a person would, looking at things.
Where it walks up to a room. I can't remember who it's going to see. But it walks up and it pauses before it goes into the room, almost like it's looking, is it okay to go in here at this point? Is it a good time to go in here? Yeah, like it's
like it knows. So it does, you very much think this thing's got a conscience. There's something else going on here.
Consciousness, but,
Yeah, consciousness. That's just well done in visuals. And I think I would definitely say that kind of spurs me on to my point being, this is very much a show don't tell film. Yes, they talk about things that happen. They talk about, as you said, the Norwegian team. They talk about they're trying to find things out. It's very much shown, apart from one bit with some like real badly done BBC graphics with writing over the top, but you just think, well, this doesn't seem right. It doesn't kind of fit in. You don't know all the backstory. You don't know who everyone is. Mm. You don't know who all the Norwegians are. You don't know anything about the American team, really, the people. Like you said, they've got backstories, but they don't sit there going, oh, yes, I haven't been able to do this since so-and-so and so-and-so, or, oh, I'm slightly under. It's all done in conversation. So you get the idea that, you know, the captain shoots one of the Norwegian guys, and one of them just kind of says, oh, the big boss has finally been able to use his pea shooter or something like that. You're not told. You start putting two and two together about the different
characters. How they relate to each other.
Exactly. Yeah. And all in all, they're just, like I said before, they are the space trucker. They are just like guys who are just working. They're just there hanging out.
It's not even that clear what they're doing there, to be honest.
No,
it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Dad came along to it with us, and we were chatting about it on the way back, and I was saying, I don't know what they're doing there. It's a research station. He was, and he was very much like, oh yeah, everyone had them up in the Antarctic, like the Russians, and it's true, but how much were they research stations or really just outposts, kind of like having a little foothold there as much as anything else? So, what about you guys? You pick up some bits.
Yeah, in that sense of what you just said, I was really struck by what quiet film it is most of the time, not just like you said, because there were some sound issues at the beginning, but there's not really any blaring soundtrack. There's that heartbeat thing that you were talking about earlier on, but it's mostly people talking, and to a degree, it's mostly people trying to solve a mystery. They go to the Norwegian base to try and work out what's going on. They go back over things. They're doing tests, and the doctor is bringing up... Yeah, it looks quite a clunky little simulation now see where imitation and assimilation and that kind of thing works. But I'd forgotten how quiet it is. And I was really impressed by that, because when I think back on those kind of things and I think about John Carpenter things, I do think of them as being quite graphic and noisy in a lot of ways. But this has reminded me that they're not. No. There's actually a lot of thinking and processing going on, as well as, you know, a lot of screaming and shooting and that some of the time.
It's a lot of background sound from the environment. You get that in the fog, if you remember, like when she's in the lighthouse or down on the beach. There isn't music score playing or a background thing. It's just wind. It's wind on the beach. It's wind on the lighthouse. It's that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there was that thing... Well, the thing, that first moment when it's under a blanket and it starts to twitch a bit. It reminded me of my favourite scene in The Fog, where they're in the morgue, and then suddenly you can see the body slowly getting up to walk towards Jamie Lee Curtis, who hasn't noticed it yet.
Yeah.
And it really reminded me of that, and I love that. But again, there was no stabbing sort of soundtrack or music or anything, or even build-up. It was just silence.
Yeah.
And then, you know, suddenly things start to happen. Yeah. Ben.
Cool. The first thing that struck me is that they get straight into the action.
Oh, yeah.
Right at the start.
Yeah.
And I'd forgotten about that. Because I think I was saying before we went to watch it, I couldn't remember a lot of the details of this film, just a general sense of it. And I couldn't quite separate it from the old black and white one.
Yeah.
What was that called again? The thing that fell to Earth or something.
The Thing from Outer Space.
Thing from Outer Space. Yeah, so I was like, wow, they actually just get straight into it. Like within the first scene, like you say, the Norwegians are chasing this dog across the icy, snowy wasteland. And you have no idea why. At first you think, what a bunch of assholes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then only slowly do you realise why they're doing that.
Mm.
Yeah, and there's just that calamitous scene at the start when they land the chopper and it's just like, it just goes about as badly as it possibly could.
Yeah.
Including the helicopter exploding, obviously.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd just completely forgotten about that. And I was like, okay, they're straight into it.
I was discussing with Dad why the Norwegian research team would have grenades with them.
Because,
you know,
backs up your outpost, doesn't it? But yeah, I suppose if you see it from our team's point of view, the Norwegians descend and are suddenly like shooting. It does give a strange perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah. So what else? There was more of it at night than I remember.
Okay.
Because obviously at the start it's broad daylight and then they're going into winter, aren't they? And I'm not actually sure, you might have a different take on this. It's not clear to me how much time elapses. Is it like a day or two or is it a few weeks? I'm not entirely sure.
I think it's
a
few weeks. It is difficult to get a read on that. Mm. And I find that a little bit tricky as well because it's probably a different point entirely. But, you know, they say about, oh, there's a storm coming in and do this. We've got this short amount of time to get to the Norwegian place. And then they go there and then they go back out and then find the alien spaceship kind of thing and wander around there a little bit and then come back again. I feel like, and it's related to that, I think there's something in the editing. I have got a couple of minor criticisms. And they're not like, you know, they're minor. But there's something in the editing in that just loses me ever so slightly in it. One of them was that they jump a bit and sometimes they make decisions and you don't know why they make certain decisions or do certain things. Mm. It's a bit like nearer the start when Kurt Russell, it's before anything's happened, it's when the dog's been put in the pound and he hears something in the background. The first thing he does is pull the fire alarm. He doesn't go and check it. He hears something. He just goes, yanks on the fire alarm, which makes me feel, is something disjointed? Has, you know, something, is something out of kilter? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, yeah,
possibly.
And there's a couple of moments like that in it. But there's definitely like the passage of time because they go from working out who may be infected to when they're guarding the outpost. And there seems to be like a passage of time that's occurred then.
Mm.
And you've got to presume there is because like the doctor's been downstairs making a craft of some sort.
That's true.
Because he's made a lot of progress underground, hasn't he?
Yeah.
But there's no indication. There's no kind of like cut or indication. And you don't want to see 5 weeks later or anything like that. But you don't get any idea. It's literally as if the next scene is a passage of time.
But then one of the things that I really liked that I'll come on to talk about, MacReady is recording what's happening, isn't he? He's got a tape and he's recording into it what's happening. That sort of thing could have been used to show the passage of time a little bit, couldn't it? But it wasn't. So maybe it had been and it was cut a bit
more,
I don't know.
Maybe it was just like, let's strip it down a bit.
Yeah,
I think it still works. It's not a problem. It's just I quite like the not knowing. So the reason I thought it might be a few weeks is because it then starts to go quite dark. You don't get a lot of scenes in daylight as you get sort of in the second half. So I wondered if it like then they're in like the permanent dark, but they don't really talk about it. And I think I quite like that. It's like they don't have to say, oh, now we're going into the endless nights and that's because of the where the sun is versus the earth and all that kind of stuff. They don't have to. It's just like, it's just dark.
It's just it,
And you can maybe make your own mind up.
I quite like the fact that when they're coming into the storm and they say, oh, it's a storm, it's going to be horrendous. They've got no problem like wandering out. We can't go outside. And then they just kind of go outside. Like not really wrapped up. The space heads are still out or showing it. Yeah.
Yeah, because what they're wearing just doesn't make sense as well. There's like a couple of guys who look like they're taking it seriously and other people who look like they're just on the way to the bar.
Yeah.
Or something, which mostly MacReady is. He's just carrying his own bar around with him.
Yeah.
What about the horror. Let's talk about the gore and the effects.
So in terms of effect, I love the effects. We kind of very briefly touched on it, but it's, apart from a couple of CGI effects relating to the spacecraft, it's pretty much all practical effects, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is a highlight. It's so good. We were talking about beforehand, there was a couple of things that I know you didn't remember, and I was kind of like, I'm not going to say anything because I can remember them quite well. And there's some really weird physical model effects, life-size things that are just, they're just creepy and weird. I love the, I don't know what kind of style you'd call it, but it's just inventive body. It's body horror.
It is. It's like organic, isn't it? Yeah.
Even at the start, when things first happen with the dog, it's just, it's nasty. You know, it's kind of grim. Because it's physical, it's kind of makes it almost worse and more icky, you know, rather than like a CGI effect or something that's processed like that. So with the dog and he's like throwing tentacles out and combining with other dogs and squirting stuff into other dogs' faces, it's like, yeah, this is just nasty. Yeah.
But what I like about that is that, yeah, it is gory and it's nasty, but the horror augments the story.
Yeah.
It's not the other way around. So many modern things, they have a horror film that's occasionally interspersed with a storyline.
But
this is very much the other way around. This is very much gore as a necessary part of this story about an alien invasion. Really.
I forgot how big the gaps were between those moments, really.
Yeah, that's right.
In some ways as well, they deal with it in quite a matter-of-fact way, which is quite funny.
Oh, they just crack on, don't they?
Yeah, so when they've got this thing on the slab, so they're like, well, we think we might have killed it, we put it on the slab, and they're doing an autopsy on it, like, let's follow routine and do an autopsy. Well, it's got liver, it's got... It's like, yeah, it's also got two faces.
Yeah, it's got...
But you're not talking about
that. And
they've
kind of melted away from each other. Like, it looks really good.
And, I do like the fact when the thing with the dog happens, he comes in and fires a flamethrower at it, and then, like, probably 5 seconds later, they come... Two guys with fire extinguishers come running in. And, you know, that's like, you know, because it's practical, it's like, well, we can't have this big... And how they must have been doing it.
Yeah.
Anyone else would be sitting there going, no, this thing needs to burn for a long time. I'm not touching anywhere near this thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's got a couple of jump scares in it. The defibrillator scene is still... It's still brilliant.
Yeah.
It's kind of grim, but...
It's really surprising.
Yeah. And my favourite scene is the testing, though, when he does that...
Blood test
with the hot needles. And just the way they pace that and they work that, it works really well. They don't rush it. They take their time. And you're surprised when it happens and how it happens. It's so kind of like immediate and sort of like shocking. You're just like, oh, crap. And then...
Yeah.
It doesn't then take a breath, but the person suddenly like, well, I've been made, and just starts like freaking, going weird alien style, and the two guys tied up next to him. It's just really funny. Yeah. They're just like, yes, away.
I know.
Yeah.
It's even got comedy injected into it when the last guy's like, I know you're terribly busy, but can you get me the f*** out of here?
Yeah. And obviously the classic head scene, which is just like, I can't remember what he says. It's like, what the f*** is that, or something like that. But you're all like, you're all thinking it. It's just like,
the funny bit I noticed with that was they don't even spot the head to begin with.
No.
And it just kind of walks past him.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like, oh, I'm getting away with it.
Yeah.
And then they're like, what the f***?
Yeah. It's really good.
Because I was thinking, they've seen it and they're not, why have they seen it? And that, oh no, they haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Thinking about the blood scene though, when they're starting to get into like it's building up and they realise what's going on and they realise it's a sort of infection or something.
Yeah.
And it can be passed from one body to another somehow. They sometimes take precautions and then other times not at all.
No, I know.
So it's quite funny. It's like they just don't, like with the blood scene, it's like, why is he holding it in his hand if he knows that, or even if he just splashed a bit of that blood, he'd be infected.
Yeah.
So why? But yeah, it doesn't need to make sense. But,
yeah, it is good. Yeah, I know what you mean. So, what about the ending then? Where do you sit on the whole discussion of the ending to the film? We can talk about the ending.
Yeah, it's bleak, isn't it? Basically, we've got a couple of characters left and we're pretty sure they're not going to make it. And they can't really make it because of everything that's happened or potentially could happen.
But do we know if they're infected or not as well?
Well, exactly, yeah. So that's why we think, well, they can't escape, can they?
No.
Because they could carry something with them.
Yeah.
Because there's that thing of, do they know if they're infected or not? It's really hard to tell, isn't it? Even with the ones that are infected, do they actually know until they're outed that they are infected? As I said earlier, with the tapes and him talking through what's happened, I think it could have spawned quite good sequels.
Yeah,
but there haven't really been sequels. I know there were some comics. I haven't read them.
Okay.
But with those tapes, I think it could have done something interesting afterwards. I know that there was the 2011 film, but that was a prequel about the Norwegian team, wasn't it? So it does surprise me, actually, that there hasn't been anything that follows up on what happened, especially in this day and age when everything's just like a sequel or trying to tie itself to an existing IP. Because it's not that it's not a popular film, because it is. It's got a cult following. So I am surprised.
I'm surprised, but I'm also kind of not disappointed either. It does kind of like make it hold its own because of that as well. Yeah, it's almost like the kind of sequel that you might get nowadays where they find the team as it was then, sort of thing, and follow on from that. But I guess, you know, what can you do? I don't know. It could be really interesting, couldn't it?
Yeah, it might be worth having a look at the comics or graphic novels.
It's a good shout. I should have a look.
Yeah, the 2011 one, we do actually have a disc for that as well, by the way, if you want to have a look at it.
Oh, yeah, I think I saw it at the time. I remember I just wasn't that impressed. I think I was a little bit bored by it, to be honest. Mm.
But what do you make of the actual ending of this film?
I like it, yeah. I quite like it if a film just goes, and then you just don't know what happens next. It's fine. Let's say the overwhelming odds are that they are infected or they just freeze to death and run out of supplies, because that's part of it as well. So with is the doctor, isn't it, who ends up in the little shack.
Yeah.
And they lock him in because he smashes up the helicopter controls.
Yeah.
Turns out that's maybe partly for a different reason. Yeah. But at the time, is it that he knows how bad it's going to get, even though he probably isn't infected, so he's trying to make sure everyone dies?
Yeah, that's kind of what he's saying, isn't it?
Because he's the one who does that simulation on the computer, isn't he? And
where does he get the data from?
I don't know,
but it's lovely.
But he also says then that, you know, the reason it survived is it was frozen in the ice for so many years, so it can survive cold. Right. So they're trying to stop that happening, but then there's the two of them left at the end who are going to freeze to death. So it makes you think, oh, well, they're resigned to the fact that they're sitting there. Yeah. Are they resigned to the fact they're sitting there because they're both infected?
Mm.
Because they know they're just going to freeze and be okay after. Yeah. Lots of different interpretations, isn't there?
Possibilities,
Is it how the end of the world starts and we just don't get the rest of the story?
Yeah. So overall, really liked it. It's well put together. It's got funny bits, but it's not funny, but it is. And it just still stands up really well. There's something about that kind of environment that's so kind of alien from our environment that even though there's old-fashioned things there, they've got like a pinball machine and they've got stuff there, it's still...
The fact that they've got a bar and let people smoke weed.
Yeah. But you kind of think, you could imagine going somewhere now and it still being the same, because that's just how it's been for years. So the technology kind of side of it, you're not even thinking about. Did you want to speak any more about the hair?
Just to say that I think if I was going to give it a grade, it would probably be Kurt Russell's hair.
Yeah.
Out of films.
I like it. I forgot. He looks awesome in it. And I was sat there going, God, that's a great fancy dress outfit. The black goggles, leather jacket, cowboy hat, you know, just that sort of style and big hair, big beard. And I was just like, he looks awesome. Yeah. Properly jealous. I was just like, man, that's a cool look that no one would ever have.
I think all the characters are actually really well drawn and really well portrayed. There's a few kind of cliches, I suppose, in there, but like Keith David, who plays Childs.
Yeah.
He's just in everything, isn't he? Yeah. He's such a versatile actor. Yeah. He pops up in so much. And in this, he plays quite a hair trigger kind of character, isn't he? They won't let him lead the team because he's got anger management issues and things. But, you know, how his story kind of progresses with it and how he disappears and comes back into it, I suppose adds to that thing you were saying about how you don't quite know. Still by the end, you don't know who was entirely affected or not. Great stuff.
Can I say another honourable mention? Was it the captain or the guys in charge?
Yeah.
The eyebrows.
Yeah.
Did you spot them? They're almost like a character in themselves. I think the reason I mention it is because you just wouldn't get that these days. Like, firstly, he probably wouldn't. I mean, he was probably 70-ish or something, that guy, 65, 70.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get an actor that old in that role to begin with.
Yeah.
In a modern film, it'd be like some 30-year-old guy. He'd be preened and polished and stuff. And obviously, the Kurt Russell was the equivalent of that in 1982, whatever. But just, I think you mentioned it before, Arkid, like the realism of the actual characters, like they look weird.
Yeah.
They look like they might have been on a base for 6 months.
Yeah.
And not washed properly and run out of hair product and stuff. Obviously, Kurt hasn't, but he's probably using the kerosene out of the tanks. Yeah.
But none of them seem to care. They're just like doing their own thing, even like after the Norwegian attack. Like you said, it's not really, they don't really discuss it afterwards. Yeah. It's just like, oh, that was weird.
Right. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Stick the dog in the thing. Let's get back to work. We've got to see what's happened over there. But
I know. Plus the guy who gets shot in that first bit, in the leg or something. And they're like, are you okay? And he's like, I'm fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's like yeah, no, this happened last week as well.
Yeah.
If you were at work and someone burst in with a gun and started shooting, it's all you talk about for months, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they're so laid back about it all. Yeah.
Cool dudes.
Well, good stuff for the thing. Big thumbs up from me. Thanks everyone for coming. It was a good turnout.
It was a good turnout, wasn't it? People seemed to be really enjoying it and just quietly sat watching it, which was a quite nice thing, I guess, of having an 18 film.
We haven't fully decided what's going to be coming up next, but I'm sure once that's out, we'll stick it on the socials.
We had a few suggestions, didn't we?
Yeah.
Let me just see what I jotted down.
There's a couple of people.
All from the one person.
No, not all.
No.
There was The Burbs.
Yeah, that was discussed.
Okay. There was Labyrinth.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There was Alien.
Yeah.
And I've written down Aliens as well. Yeah, not that anyone suggested that, but that came up before.
I did. That's always me. I'd watch Aliens over Alien in the cinema like that. But I obviously like both. But.
Yeah. And also The Fog.
Yeah.
Came up as well.
Yeah. Hi, Dad.
Yeah. Well, hi, Kelly.
Yeah. Well done, everyone. What's coming up next week?
Well, we do have Ferrari.
We do have Ferrari. Are we going to be taking Mum?
Possibly.
Or is she going to be a fan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Everyone's really super excited about that.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't know. I think it's going to be fine. I just kind of can't be. I'm not that interested, to be honest. Mm. I will be perfectly honest. I'm more interested in the cars than I am the story of the family and all that kind of stuff. And Adam Driver reprising his accent from House of Gucci. No. Yeah.
So, I think it'll be fine.
I think it will be fine.
I'm quite interested to see it.
We can all pick something else. We'll have a look.
We'll see what's there.
You're quite looking forward to it, aren't you, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, it probably will be a bit rubbish, but yeah.
Sell it to us, Ben.
Yeah, do.
Yeah. Well, if people want to get in touch and tell us, give us some recommendations and tell us what else we should be watching, how would they do that?
They can get us on the socials at Just So Jables on Facebook, Instagram and X. They can email hello@justsojables.com, have a look at the website, justsojables.com. If you put /retro reels on the end, you'll see what is going to be next on Retro Reels.
Yeah.
Boom.
Cool. Nice. Well, see you next week.
Bye.
Who knows what's going to happen next?
Just So Jables.